Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I'm your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XorcNX. Here with Brian, you can find on Twitter at, what is it, Pure Rock Fury. Oh. And we're here with Chris, you can find on Twitter at SkateXEdge. I believe he has more than 600 followers now.
So. More like 15.
15 followers or 1,500?
Actually, I got a new one today.
Uh-oh. He's actually in the studio, too. That's why he sounds good.
Yeah.
The number one for today is Normandy Gold. No relation to Booster Gold.
Before we go any further.
Yes.
And now I didn't interrupt you, but what was up with all the posts that you were putting? Like, what's this Pantheon thing that you...
Patreon?
Patreon, sorry. Whatever.
Well, our over-under is movies with bad CGI, and yeah, we do. We have a Patreon now, so if you guys out there like listening and you want to support us, head over to patreon.com/reviewandroast, and you can do so.
See, that's why I asked you, so you could throw that in there. And
I was actually probably going to forget.
So you could pitch it.
It's literally been up for less than a day at this point, so probably would have. And you can find us on the Facebook at facebook.com/reviewandroast. You can find everything, all of our other shows at comicroast.com, and we're going to start the show.
Yeah, because you can shamelessly plug it because...
Yeah.
It's ours.
I really have to remember to add that to the repertoire. But it's been
3 days. We have
just put a sticky note on your monitor.
We have 700 prospective patrons right now.
Do we?
Prospective meaning potential. So none.
You know 700 people?
I know that 700 people exist.
That's about right.
I don't know all of them, though. I just know like four of them.
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
You know what I know? I know that last night I finally, since International Tabletop Day, and I've really always... was always interested in the game, and I played it on Tabletop Day, and I finally bought it last night. Above and Below is now part of my collection. And I did get it down the street at the Mr. Goat because it was $35, and he gave it to me for $34 because there was a nick on the box. I actually think I should have got it cheaper, but he doesn't seem to care about the collectability that I do.
Oh, there goes the sponsor.
Hey, fuck 'em.
No, that's actually incorrect.
Really? You know what else is incorrect? Can we really just sit here for a minute and talk about why are there so many different sizes for fucking cards with these games? I am sick of buying cards and then buying sleeves and being like, well, they don't fucking fit this game. Looks like I gotta use this for something else. And Fantasy Flight has 97 different colors for the cards they need. It's just driving me nuts. Because I finally bought Dragon Shields last night because I like the way that they got the matte textured back or whatever. It's really kind of neat. I like it. And then I come home and I'm like, what the hell was I going to sleeve? I don't even remember. I'm like, oh yeah, I was going to sleeve Mission Red Planet. Oh wait, that's a Fantasy Flight game. These sleeves are way too fucking big.
Well, Fantasy Flight games put the color coding and the amount of packages of sleeves you need to sleeve that game on the back of each box.
Yeah, I know.
Or just don't buy sleeves like I do.
And you get sausage fingers and nicks and
crannies
and crooked.
This is going to sound silly, but we've got four copies of Lost Cities because it's a two-player game. It's super fun, and we figured, you know, I think Brian found it on sale for like $5, so he bought them out. And it was more or less like, well, the one that Mike bought, we have played the shit out of it and kind of destroyed it at this point. So I took mine. I bought one off of Brian here, and then I bought sleeves for it, and that's going to be the next in line, I think. But I don't know. The more you play with shit, the more gummy and terrible the pieces tend to get. So
gummy.
I don't know. I like to sleeve my stuff. I just wish they were a little more uniform because, you know, it sucks when you look at the shelf and 90% of my games are Fantasy Flight, and Fantasy Flight doesn't make Dragon Sleeve style cards, and Dragon Sleeve don't make European sized fucking sleeves.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I bought some matte finish Ultra Guards clear, and now no one carries them. So,
hey, nice.
I started sleeving Imperial Settlers with it, and I have half a sleeve game, and now I have no sleeves to finish them off. So that sucks.
How do you say womp womp?
But they do have the Ultra Pro, like super perfectly cut sleeves. They're kind of thin, but they fit in all boxes because they're cut to the size of the card, so they're literally just big enough to fit the card. So there's no overhang. Those are pretty rad. Yep. I sleeved all of Seasons and the expansions with those.
Nice.
Have any of you guys seen any of the, I guess, previews of Rising Sun or reviews of it before coming out? Like, I just saw one. I forgot who did it, but this guy said that he played Blood Rage and thought it was okay. Played Rising Sun and thought it was the shit.
Well, the aforementioned Goatmaster, Andrew at the Gaming Goat, who is a friend of the show, he got to go to Gamma a couple months ago. He got to play it, and he said, and he's not really, from our conversations, he's not like a big board gamer. He's starting to get into them now, but he was more of a Magic player before he got into the business. And he played Rising Sun and said, it is the shit.
That game can't come to my front door soon enough.
I didn't even ask, because he had. We went there for a demo, and he had some promos on the table, and I said, dude, Blood of an Englishman. I'm like, where'd you get this? He's like, oh, dude, I just came back from Gamma. I'm like, dude, did you? He goes, play Rising Sun? Hell yeah, that game is the best. I'm like, all right. I guess he played Rising Sun.
I'm so glad I fucking backed it on Kickstarter.
You and seven.
When does it actually come out, though?
I already did my thing, like, think about a couple weeks ago, where they sent, like, the people who backed it, like, an email on, so you could pay your shipping and shit like that, and, like, you know, right, if you wanted to get any extras with it.
I think the game hits retail in March of next year, but the Kickstarter people will start getting it in, like, probably September, October, I think.
Yeah, so I'll have it by Thanksgiving, I'm hoping.
It's a CMON game, and CMON is kind of like the Hydra head of board games. Like, they're like not the biggest company, but they're like the super hip company who's got the coolest games and the coolest dudes, and they're like the dudes with the dudes who know other dudes.
They have all these extravagant miniatures and like 5,000 miniatures.
They started out, this is the weirdest thing too, from what I gather, they started out as, you know how like Facebook started out as a hot or not website for college girls?
They did it for miniatures, is what I believe. It was like a website to like showcase your miniatures, your painted miniatures.
Yeah. Oh, you mean like our Instagram.com/StarWarsTabletop?
Sort of. What about stuff?
Zing. Just wanted to plug some more of our own stuff there.
But yeah, so...
My only wish with you're right there.
Yeah.
With Kickstarter, I just wish that the dates were more realistic. Every time I've backed something on Kickstarter, it's like 8 months later that I actually do. Like, you guys,
CMON's actually been pretty good about what they said, because they had laid it out like even before their campaign was over. Like, when you were gonna get the email, when you were supposed to do this, when you were supposed to do that. And they've been pretty much on time with it.
They're a company on the rise.
Well, that's a good thing. Let's hope it stays that way.
So, yeah.
They're one of those companies that, like, they put a game out and it becomes instantly a hit before it even comes out because it's cool mini or not.
You know what, though? I'm not going to lie. Like, quality of miniatures really can help your campaign. Like, a game can be all right.
And this one has, like, 5 million.
Yeah. You know, like, the Magic the Gathering board game has the crappiest miniatures ever? They look okay when you get them, but then when the game sits for 6 months and you open it back up, and you're like, oh, dude, all the bases are warped. That rules. I guess we'll just keep the cards for no reason because they're not the right size. So I can only use them in this stupid game.
And you can't use them in a different sleeve.
No.
Sorry. Just wanted to keep hammering that home. Well, that's what we should do. We should start a sleeve company.
Somebody actually did.
We'll make the best sleeves out there, and we'll make them for every single size card.
That would actually be all right, because there's a game that I have that I cannot find sleeves for to save my life. I either can find sleeves that are way too big or they're too tight.
All right, I'll make them. Give me some jewel bags.
As soon as Rising Sun comes on my doorstep, I'm not even going to like call you guys. I'll just come over.
Your daughter needs to be fed. Yeah, Rising Sun, later. He won't even have pants on. He'll just have like a pant leg attached to a leg.
Ooh, so
I'm expecting the box to be huge with all the shit that I'm supposed to be getting, like the game itself, then like all the miniatures that were unlocked. Then they actually, like at the very end, like made a box to put all that shit in, like another box for you to put the game.
So does this have like more miniatures than like Mechaverse Minions?
Ooh, I don't know.
Because that we've only played twice, but that box is
there's
pretty
eight
ginormous.
Factions in this one.
The only thing with Mechs versus Minions is all the minions look pretty much exactly.
Oh
alike.
No, yeah, they do. They have it's the same guy with like three different poses.
But that game is also super dope.
Yeah, I think I'm going to add that to my list. Pretty next.
I think
pretty
I
next.
Think pretty near, much next.
See, yeah. I think that Near and Far is like the next one I'm totally into.
Wow! So we just went down the board game rabbit hole. That was neat.
Yeah.
I like
are we,
it.
Are we still recording?
Yeah, I. Wouldn't that suck if, like, I look back and we're not? Oh. Yeah, we are. I'm going to bump me up a little bit because I'm feeling like I'm not loud enough. Yeah, so that was my week, and that was us nerding out. So, Brian did anything?
Yeah, I made a fool of myself at GameStop trying to ask a girl out. That's about all I got for that.
That's pretty neat.
Not doing that again.
I wouldn't either.
What else? I watched a lot of Honest Trailers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's always fun.
I was trying to get rid of gnats in the floor drain.
I should say, I watched a lot of Honest Game trailers this time.
Mm.
Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy XV, Final Fantasy XI, Final Fantasy this, Horizon Zero Dawn. Yeah, this. I watched the Elder Scrolls Skyrim one again. Because like, how he rips on the game and goes, but at the end, you get to ride a fucking dragon. He's like, that's right. I said a motherfucking dragon. And you just see the thing flying around a dragon. And he goes, and then they do the title, Skyrim. I fucking love those. They're so dumb.
I still think that game's awesome.
I actually have had it for a couple years now, and I actually just today bought a PS3 controller. That was part of the reason I went to GameStop, was to get a new PS3 controller, because mine are both busted.
You know what the sad part
but
is?
But you can get Skyrim for the PS4.
I'm not going to buy it again, though. Since I already have it.
The main reason I want to turn my PS3 on right now is so that I can play Final Fantasy VII PS1.
Do it.
Well, I've started it. I just saying. Like, I have no desire to play any of my other PS3 games.
I still want to play Bioshock Infinite, and I think I want to try and finish that Batman game finally.
Which one?
Arkham City?
Damn, dude.
Maybe that's
I
it.
Don't remember which one that is.
Fuck.
That's the second one.
I finished them all.
He finished them all.
They all kick
ass.
Well,
I want to get Arkham Knight, but I don't want to buy it until I finish the other one.
Mm. We got a long way to go.
Scott didn't even finish Arkham Knight.
I didn't finish any of them. I think the one...
You guys are posers.
Arkham Asylum, I was ready to drive her to that thing once I got to Mr. Freeze.
Dude, those Batman games made... I don't know how to put it, but...
I know
superhero games were dumb. Until that one came out.
I wish you had a little more control over the camera angle, but no, they're fun. They're definitely fun, but it basically comes down to a button masher.
It's a really good one, though.
Batman look like a fucking hard ass.
That first Arkham Asylum game was probably the most satisfying video game experience I've had since.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Especially when you fucking fight like seven like of like Joker's thugs and you kick the shit out of all seven of them.
There were three boss fights towards the end that were like kind of hard, and one of them was Bane, because not only did you have to like fight off his minions, but you also had to get around behind him, get on his back, pull the things
right
out so you can hit him, because if you tried to hit him while he was all venomed up, you were just going to get wasted. So it was a lot of like critical timing. And then the next one was Killer Croc, because you're fighting him on these like floating boards in the sewer. And if you fucking swing and miss, he'll fucking just basically bite your face off. And then there was like a
death roll.
So I was sitting there thinking like, man, this is going to be one of those games where like the boss fights, and actually the Poison Ivy boss fight was a fucking bitch.
That was my hardest one.
That one took me the longest. But it was like when I beat it, I was like, fuck, that was satisfying.
I remember that one.
Once you play Arkham City, you get to fight Clayface.
I like it. See, I got to get back on that thing. But yeah, like I thought like it was going to be one of those games where like the boss fights before the fucking end was going to be like super tough, and then you're going to get the end here and be like, that's it. The Joker boss fight was actually really hard. Took me a good 10 tries to beat it. And it's not like a 5-second thing. It's like a good 20-minute boss fight.
I'm trying to think of one. Oh, yeah, Harvey Dent's in Arkham City.
Spoilers!
He's in it. I didn't say what he does, but he's in it.
I'm only kidding. It's a 10-year-old game. I don't think it matters at this point.
And Mr. Freeze is in a... Wait, he was in Arkham Asylum? No.
Mr. Fries. No?
No. That was bad.
You gotta play Arkham Knight because Azrael is in it.
Is Batmite in it?
No.
No, I don't want to play it. Probably terrible.
Speaking of terrible, how was your week?
Fighting gnats.
That was your whole week?
Well, not the whole week. But
literally punching him in the face.
No, I had to clear out the floor drain with boiling hot water.
You do the water and baking soda and vinegar thing?
Yep.
Been there.
And I got rid of 80% of them, and then the next day I'm like, there's a couple more flying around. I'm like, dude, what the hell? And I look in the drain, and there's a couple more of their little eggs or hot, you know, whatever they're... So I do it again.
Boo.
Because they, like... They, like, breed in that sewage, that, like, that goop and gunk that's in your floor drain.
Yeah.
You're wasting shit.
In the trap.
Yeah, they like, feed off of it. Because we didn't have any, and then I go, like, I was just there down in the basement one day and, you know, doing laundry. Then the next morning I go down there, and there's, like, a swarm of them. I'm like, dude, I'm like, what the hell? There was nothing here, and now there's, like, a whole bunch of little shits flying around. I
hate that.
But I got rid of them.
Speaking of getting rid of them, why doesn't Brian get rid of some words about the number one? Nailed it.
Nah, not really, but okay.
It's all right. There's been a lot worse around this table.
Yeah, true.
Well, do you want to at least, like,
yeah, tee it off? Normandy gold to number one?
Set him up.
Swing.
Like in volleyball, set him up for the spike.
You don't want to announce the writer?
I don't know. If I had that in front of me, I would gladly do it, but I don't have that.
All right, well, then I guess I will have to. My pick for this week was, hold on, let me get it.
Normandy Gold.
Number one on Titan.
It was Normandy Gold, number one, from Titan / Hard Case Crime, which is why I picked it. Written by Megan Abbott and Allison Galen. Artwork by Steve Scott. And lettering by Comicraft, which if you're a fan of Elephant Men, you kind of know who they are. So, starts out in the woods in Oregon, where this woman is basically filleting a moose with a knife. And she's giving her backstory about how she grew up in a basement apartment in the Bronx to a mom who had a very active night lifestyle. And she was going to be named Victory because her dad was coming home from Normandy. But instead, her dad came home as a letter, as an apology letter from the United States government. So instead, her mom named her Normandy, because that's a really good thing to be named when your dad is killed in war, I guess. So she runs away when she's a teenager. She ends up living with this super religious sheriff guy who decides he's going to teach her how to survive. And she becomes a...
Hooker?
A sheriff or something, no? In Oregon? Where she gets a phone call from her younger sister, who she hasn't seen in like 10 years, who thinks she's going to marry some rich politician because her younger sister ends up in Washington, D.C., but turns out her sister also has a very active night lifestyle because she is a prostitute.
Ah,
she's
see,
a high-class
it.
Prostitute who works for a madam named Felicia Vane, I believe, and... Things don't happen the way that the younger sister had hoped, and unfortunately, Normandy Gold is on the phone when the act of violence happens to her sister, so she decides to go to D.C. to investigate what happened and who's behind the murder of her sister, and she decides to go deep undercover, Foxy Brown style, and if you haven't guessed, this book is set in the 1970s, so think a... kind of pulpy noir, All the President's Men meets Foxy Brown, and you're kind of in the ballpark, except this woman is Caucasian, but other than that, it's got the same kind of Pam Grier aesthetic. Even the layout of the inside cover kind of gives that 70s exploitation vibe, and maybe a little Cagney and Lacey thrown in, like tough female cop in a world full of sexist mustache cops.
So Cagney and Lacey mixed with T.J. Hooker.
Not T.J. Hooker, but like Cagney and Lacey, Foxy Brown, and
Magnum P.I.
Like a 70s political thriller all rolled into one. And yeah, I mean, the artwork's kind of standard for a Titan book. It's really like well illustrated, really lifelike, but it's not super like Sean Phillips original or anything like that. But it's really good. But I'm totally, I think I'm into this book. Because I love 70s movies, and this definitely has that Bronson, Pam Grier vibe that I totally get into. I see this woman like taking a crescent wrench to someone's neither regions at some point.
Yeah, I can definitely see that coming.
She is the tough, underestimated hot mama from Portland that no one sees coming.
Hot mama from Portland.
She's like, you know, she's breaking out of the Big Bird cage. She's throwing down the patriarchy, and she's gonna find her sister's killer, and she's gonna do some stuff. And wow, baseline. I don't know what you guys think.
Well, I actually really kind of, like you said, dug the vibe of it. Obviously, if her father was in World War II, then, you know, this doesn't put this in, obviously, it's not current time, so it's back in the good old 60s, 70s, depending on how old she is. And, you know, like you said, not really jiving with her younger sister. You know, nothing against her, but, you know, she hasn't really talked to her in years, and now she's wanting to solve what she's assuming is a disappearance, I think it sounds like. I didn't really get, you don't really know what happened to the younger sister. So, I mean, she could be investigating a murder or kidnapping. She doesn't know, but bottom line is she traveled across the country to go and investigate this. And, yeah, it's just got that whole, Serpico vibe in comics.
Serpico. There you go. I didn't even think of that. Now you mentioned it, it was like, oh yeah, the vest.
Yeah. I mean,
the furry vest.
I remember, yeah, because she stripped it off of that moose from the, you know, because, well, here's the thing. I don't remember if you mentioned it or not, but, you know, after she ran away from home, she got into trouble in Oregon, and that's when the sheriff there took her in and kind of finished the job of raising her, and that's where she learned the hunting and the filleting of mooses. But, yeah, I mean, I dug it. It was good.
I don't see anything different other than it being a female-led
different,
character.
Different from
The story, I mean, from any other crime story. Not saying it's bad, but I'm just...
What, do you want it to be in outer space or something?
No, but I'm
that
just...
That would be awesome.
I'm just saying, like...
Talking robots? Mannequins?
I mean, it's a story you've heard before.
I don't know. I haven't heard it all yet. I've heard, like, part of it.
I mean, well, the basis of it being the same. Oh, okay, she found out, you know, her sister's, you know, dead, so she's going to go look for her sister's killer. Okay, well...
I mean...
Whether yeah. It's, like, a father looking for the son's killer, or the son looking for the father's killer, or, you know, a brother looking for the brother's killer, or the brother looking for the best friend's killer, I mean, it's no... What's the difference? Besides it being, you know...
Does it have to be different?
No, but I'm just saying, like,
It's a very similar story.
Similar... Yeah, I'm not saying it's bad.
No, you know...
The fact that it's a female lead character is, you know, lead character is, you know, different.
I guess, for me...
Maybe I'm just being more, like...
I feel like crime is pretty... cut and dry. It's not like,
well, yeah, it is.
It's not like, and someone in the real world, I don't think criminals are going, you know, I want to commit a crime, but I want to do something different. I want this one to really stand out. I mean, some people
You never know.
Some people do just by happenstance, but I don't think anyone's planning, like, you know, I'm going to dress up like a big giant pink elephant, and I'm going to fucking just go through a Walgreens and kick people in the nuts and then run away.
Well, I mean, it's got all like the, I guess, all the tropes of, like, you know, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just...
It does. I mean, realistically, these kind of stories are
It's written well.
These kind of stories, in my opinion, are kind of just wish fulfillment. You don't get to kick... If somebody breaks into your house and steals your TV, you don't get to find the guy and have five cops hold him down where you kick the shit out of him to get your satisfaction. So you kind of get that through, like, the tough chick who's going to avenge her sister. Dun, dun, dun. I mean, that's all it is. It's just savagery and wish fulfillment.
I mean, the kitchen was like that.
The kitchen?
Isn't that what it was called? Yeah. The one on Vertigo?
Yeah, I remember that book.
I do not.
It was an 8-part series. I liked it.
I didn't really care for it.
I don't remember that.
It was basically The Departed, but all the leads, all the criminals were all women.
Yeah, because all their other husbands had been put in jail, so they had to kind of like run the show, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, I mean this. I mean, yeah, it's trope heavy for sure, but you know, I'm a sucker for this stuff, so it has to be like really boring for me to go, eh, I'm not.
Well,
really
it's not boring by any stretch. I'm just.
It's hard case crime. I mean, they're pretty much kind of all in the same general.
But see, that's what I like about Ed Brubaker. He does that stuff, but he like manages to throw in like some kind of like a little bit of like of the supernatural within it.
He's really good at that, though. Like other people have tried
like,
that
with Fatale and like Kill or Be Killed or.
Right, and other people have tried that and failed miserably, so for someone to be able to mesh the two together, it takes a really skilled hand, and he is that person, and there's really...
Oh my god, the killer was the ghost! Done. I just did it.
No. I'm just saying, like, Ed Brubaker is the master of that. Like, he's almost invented the crossover noir genre in a way. And anyone else is literally just trying to ride his coattails.
Yeah. He does a real good job at doing that.
But to do straight noir is like, it's a little safer, I guess, is in terms of style.
It always winds up being some kind of revenge story.
I'm into that.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
No, I know. I didn't go into...
That's why I would say Ed Brubaker's at the top of that genre, because of...
I didn't go into this going like, oh, this is going to be the game changer. I'm like, this is right in my wheelhouse. You got the tough lady cop who's going to go undercover to Foxy Brown her way up to the top of the chain and take down the man. I'm into it. Let's do this.
Sweet. All right. Well, why don't you start with some numbers?
Yeah, like Chris said, it's trope heavy. There's a lot of familiar angles and so on, but I like the character. I like where it's, I like the avenues it looks to be going down as far as getting into like, politics, and I like the era of the 1970s, so I'm going to give this an 8. I probably won't get the singles, but when the trade comes out, I'll probably grab that.
I hate saying that, because by the time the trade comes, I normally forget about it, but no, I agree. I liked it, but I'm also not at an 8. I was going to go about a 7. That's what I had written down here.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah, like I said, it's not bad. I definitely enjoyed it, and if I do happen to come across the trade, I probably will grab it, especially if Brian reads it and says, I mean, it has huge potential to just become awesome, but it, you know, depending on how the story goes, just like any story, I guess, can go either way. But
yeah, that's how I feel. But like, if you're into that kind of hard case crime stuff, then I'm thinking, like,
if you saw my bookshelf, you'd know I am.
I think for most, like, it might just be like, you know, it might be like one of those things where like they read it and they're like, "Oh, well, it's been there, done that." Like, you know,
I've.
But like I said, the book's not. It's written well.
It's
a well written story.
I love that. Like Damien and I have said before, like that stuff is like, it's a no brainer. You hand it to me and I'm like, it's what? A tough guy in a fucking overcoat who drinks whiskey and sleeps with 20 women. I'm like, I'm into it. Let's do this.
Come over and see me sometime.
Yeah, I don't have to be sold very hard on that stuff. I mean, I have a bookshelf full of hard case crime novels that I've read, and on top of that is a stack of other ones that I haven't read yet. And they're all like half naked women and dudes with guns. That's pretty much what I want. Dudes with guns, half naked women, jazz music, and a little bit of.
But see, when it comes to that genre, it's. For me, it's Ed Brubaker. Yeah, I'll. If it's called Solving the Case of Poop, I'll buy it as long as he read it and wrote it.
That's a weird case.
But I'm just saying, like,
it could be, but it could be
disgusting.
That too.
Yeah.
Well, we all know that he wouldn't write something like that to begin with, anyways. But
you never know. He's good at that stuff.
But his stories are all—they're all different. I mean, yeah, they do have similarities between it, but they're all different.
Yeah,
and actually, I would like to see him. Well, he already did the female-led character with Fatale.
Well, that's another most part. Again, that's another thing. I'm a big fan of the whole hard ass mama who's not going to take anyone's shit.
Pam Grier, what?
That's what I'm saying. Pam Grier, little fucking Jodie Foster in The Brave One. Yeah. I mean, that movie was pretty close to amazing.
You know what else is close to amazing?
What's that?
Or over under?
What's that?
You don't remember? It was your
right, movies. You're the host, fool. Announce that.
Yeah, I know.
Shit.
I did earlier. You actually questioned it when you came.
Oh, I know
what
it is.
I'll be
threw
the host.
Me off.
I'll be the host with the most.
The host. Yeah, I've used that joke before, and these guys fucking gave it to me.
You never say it.
You're the host with the toast.
That's even better.
Over under is movies with bad CGI, and my first one, I'm not sure. I know how Brian feels about it. I'm not sure how Chris feels about it. But I know out in the real world, it's ridiculously popular, and I just never got it. So overrated for me is, you can pick any one of them, is the Matrix movies.
Oh. I haven't seen a Matrix movie in so long, I couldn't tell you.
The first one, and that's it for me.
Yeah, I think it was the second one that had like the worst effects, second or third.
Say the first one didn't have bad effects.
Go back and watch it nowadays. And
I do. I don't know.
But I know that one of them is pretty well regarded as having shitty effects, but people still love those movies, and I don't know. Eh.
All I know is I was forced to go see the second one, and I don't remember the name. There's The Matrix Reloaded, The Matrix Reimagined, The Matrix Rebooted, The Matrix Remixed, The Matrix Rematrixed. I don't fucking know what they're all called. I went to the second one. It started out where there was like 25. Who's the dude that plays the agent, whatever his name? The guy that hates
Smith.
Me.
Hugo Weaving,
yes. He hates every movie he's in.
Yeah.
So he thinks he's like the greatest Shakespearean actor of our time. And
yeah, the closest he came to that was Lord of the Rings, Elrond settled down.
He apparently hated that too, so I don't know. The guy hates everything. Great actor, though. Anyway. There's a fight scene with Keanu Reeves and Agent Weaving Graves. What's his name? There's
Red
like
Skull,
20 of them.
Red Skull.
Yeah, Red Skull. Let's just call him Red Skull. And they're fighting, and all of a sudden Keanu Reeves is like Kung Fu fucking master. And then he pauses in mid-fight and goes, ooh, upgrades. I'm like, fuck this movie. Jesus Christ. You're fighting 20 dudes. You have time for a fucking catchphrase? Kiss my ass. Fuck that movie. And then at the end, I forget the hell, buildings are blowing up or something, a giant snake in the sky, and he looks at Carrie Ann Washington and goes, I can't help it. I love you too damn much. I'm like, this. I actually said in the theater, I go, this fucking movie is the worst. I so hate those movies. I probably thought the commercial looked awesome back in the day, because I did see the first one in the theater, and I remember going, people like this? Holy shit, this movie sucks. I ranted about your pick. For like
that,
ever.
That's fine. That's why I picked it, because I want. It's called a discussion.
That and you walked away for like an hour.
Why? Well, I just went to grab my phone.
No. Well, I guess we'll do my pick then. My pick is another movie came out around the same time. Another movie series that's popularity is probably in top five of all time. I've only seen the first one, seen it twice. Haven't been able to stay awake through it either time. Maybe that's good. I don't know, but the effects were awful. That's the first Harry Potter movie, whatever, the Chamber of Snakes or Secrets and Pot of Gold, whatever the fuck it's called. The Quidditch scene specifically looks like it was filmed in a 1960s Mary Poppins movie. It's so bad. And,
I was actually going to pick that myself, but, I figured it was kind of
The effects.
Popular one.
Did you remember the second season of The Sopranos when Tony Soprano's mom in the actress had actually passed away? So they CGI'd like her face from other episodes over a fake body to kind of write her out of the show?
No.
There's one episode of the second season of The Sopranos where they needed the mom character because they'd already written the episode, but the lady that played her was dead. So they found an actor of a similar body, dressed her up like Mom Soprano, and they CGI'd her. So there are parts where like her body's facing this way, but her head's facing way off to the side, and it didn't fit this like the cutout. It was so horrible. It was unbelievably impossible to not notice it. And I was going, man, when I was watching Harry Potter the last time, I was like, man, these effects are as bad as that Sopranos episode where they CGI'd Tony's mom's
face. I
didn't want to
see this now.
And I'm sure it's on YouTube.
I've watched The Sopranos, so I mean, I just don't remember that.
And the thing that sucked is that whole season was the best one, like, by miles. But that scene was so bad, I was laughing hysterically during it. And that's what I feel like the Harry Potter movies are like. When they're playing Quidditch, super obvious it's fake. I mean, it's fake anyway, but looked like fucking Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins, y'all.
Yep.
True story.
Star Wars.
Which one?
The ones when they redid them in, like, the late 90s.
When they redid the originals?
Oh. Yeah.
I was thinking about that.
As much as I love Star Wars, like, when they have Jabba the Hutt, like, at Mos Eisley space station, and, you know, Han Solo's talking to him. It looks like Han Solo's talking to a green a gumdrop.
Yeah. You mean like when they oversaturated the colors so, like, the ships had, like, black boxes around them?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I totally remember
and
that now.
Like, even, like, Return of the Jedi, like, the part where they're getting ready to go to Endor, and Han Solo's talking to Lando, you know, he's like, take the ship, take the ship. You could totally tell that the fucking background is fucking a painted wall.
Yeah. God, I remember those.
But, yeah, the redone ones.
Oh, can I throw another one in?
Sure.
It's actually not overrated. No, I'll save it for my underrated, actually. Never mind, because I have two now.
All right. I have one, and most people are probably going to think I'm just retarded. And think Brian might be on the fence or maybe agree with me. I don't know, but whatever. I still like the stupid movie, even though everyone hated it. It was the Green Lantern.
The one with Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah. It was not.
What was wrong
but
with the effects? I thought the effects were good.
They were all right. There were some parts, but just in general, people hate that movie. And then, you know, well, like when you look up the list of movies with bad CGI, that, like, tops the list a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
I find that odd.
I feel like I need to watch it again because I felt like it wasn't that bad, but, like, maybe I'm just an apologist. I don't know. But
maybe because the suit's super bright, so it just looks like a video game.
Eh.
I was thinking more like, oh, my God, that's super claymation awful. Like, but whatever. I mean,
there you go. You just said it was awful.
No, not that. Oh, I don't know. His suit did look like a video game. I don't, the movie is bad, but I like it because, I don't know, I like Green Lantern, so, again, I feel like an apologist. It's not the worst. It's hardly the worst superhero movie of all time. Hardly.
Agreed.
Like, it's a middle-of-the-road movie. It does, I mean, it really didn't accomplish much other than just get Green Lantern on the screen, but whatever. I have two. My first one also was a superhero movie, and it's the OG 1978 Superman. Specifically the scene when they blow up Krypton, and you can tell that the explosion was done in front of some kind of cloth or blanket because you can see the folds in the material as the planet explodes. It's fucking funny as hell to watch, but it's so bad. So bad. And in the flying scenes, especially when he's flying away and getting smaller and he just turns into this really, really rich black dot moving across a pale screen. It's like, oh, that's super obvious that that's not a flying man. Although when I was 4, I thought the guy fucking flew.
Yeah, well, also, when it was made for a standard definition screen, that probably didn't look that bad.
No, it looked amazing.
You put that shit on a fucking HD screen, and you're like, oh, my God.
That was the movie that made me go, I think I love movies. Maybe it was the second one. Yeah, it was the second one, because I was like 1 when the first one came out. But Superman 2 was it was the movie that made me realize I was going to love movies the rest of my life, but also Terrence Stamp as General Zod scared my fucking face off because he was intimidating. I was like, man, if I ever have like a baseball coach or a teacher like that, I'm fucking quitting school. Because that guy is mean as shit. Plus, he had that fucking Incredible Hulk guy who would just like stare at you, and then his eyes would throw you like 50 miles away. Dude, go watch that movie now. It's ridiculous because they're walking around in plastic pajamas. But back then, when you're 5 and he's going, kneel before Zod, you're like, oh my God, I'll fucking do it. Jesus Christ, don't kill me. But the other one, my actual pick, was going to be the Kurt Russell 1996 classic Escape from L.A.
Oh, that was on the list, too. I've seen those.
I thought you were going to say Roadhouse. That's what Patrick
Kurt
Casey,
Russell was not in Roadhouse.
That's right. It was Patrick
Show Casey. Some respect. Respect the mustache. No. That movie is... I mean, it's fucking... It's Kurt Russell. If it was any other actor, that movie would be terrible. But Kurt Russell can be in a commercial for laundry detergent for an hour and a half, and I'm going to probably say it should get an Oscar. Because Kurt Russell is the greatest actor to ever walk planet Earth, pretty much. Mm. Other than Ric Flair. But no, the part where he goes surfing, or when he's like in the pod or whatever, when he goes through the ocean and the shark bites at his ship or whatever. Oh my God, it looks like fucking Finding Nemo. It's so bad. But the movie kicks ass, and Pam Grier and Bruce Campbell are in it, and so is Steve Buscemi, and it's got a ridiculous plot that makes absolutely no sense. And Peter Fonda's in it, and Stacy Keach is in it. It's like a, it's a classic of just complete nonsense. And he's Snake Plissken, and it's basically Kurt Russell showing how little acting range he actually has.
Whoa.
Oh, dude, Kurt Russell is probably the third greatest American to ever live. It would go Ric Flair, Abraham Lincoln, Kurt Russell. I just
threw Abraham Lincoln?
I couldn't think of anybody else. I just threw a name out there.
I almost just zipped right past me. But I caught it.
So yeah, there's never going to be a movie with Snake Plissken if Kurt Russell is Snake Plissken. That's not going to be something you need to have tattooed on your face.
Okay. Chris?
I don't know if these would be considered bad CGI, but I'm going to say maybe, like, I don't know, I guess The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I have never seen that.
I love that movie.
I've heard it's really bad, but
it is not.
Most of the complaints I've heard comes from Alan Moore, and he hates everything. He probably hates his family, so I mean, can't take his word for anything, really.
But
he only likes his weird snake voodoo books.
I was going to say Clash of the Titans, but the OG version, but that's not CGI, so
it's
Ray Harry. Right. It's all real.
That's Ray Harryhausen. Claymation effects.
Yep.
And that movie's awesome.
I like the claymation effects because it made them look creepy, especially Calabas.
Yep, that movie was awesome. It was awesome when I was a kid.
And the Kraken.
Kraken rules. Kraken looks like a terrible action figure that somebody flushed on the toilet.
But wow. The best bad CGI is when like Poseidon goes down to open up, you know, to release the Kraken. You should see that. That looks bad.
Now I'm gonna watch it again. I wonder if I still own it.
I own it.
I did own it.
Go get it. We'll watch it. And then we'll do a podcast on it.
Dude, I'll totally do a podcast on Clash of the Titans.
Watch it on YouTube.
Probably so. Or on Netflix.
All right, so moving on along to the usual best thing ever. I'm actually going to be super lame and rehash one that I did like a couple weeks ago because I am just still so awesomely pumped that having a record player again is fucking awesome. And my little setup sounds amazing, and I can't brag about it enough because I still think it's amazingly awesome. And
it is actually, it's pretty good.
I don't know, man. Like,
and that Crystal Fairy album sounds
amazing. And that record, yeah, if anyone out there really, honest to God, has just even the slightest ounce of do-it-yourself know-how, I urge you to go to Parts Express and buy the C-Note bookshelf speakers. These things will blow you away with how amazing they sound. Just saying.
Yeah, that Crystal Fairy record sounds awesome on those things. But that thing just sounds awesome anyway.
Yeah, so, I mean, I hate to be lame and rehashing, you know, one that I've used literally 3 weeks ago, but it's seriously, you guys need to come over and hear this.
But there's like two records so far this year that have been really good, and one that's coming out that I'm really excited about.
Yeah, actually, the new At the Drive-In, I've been listening to that thing every day.
That thing is good. That Crystal Fairy, from what I've heard of it so far, is really good. Yeah. And August 25th, boom, new Queens of the Stone Age album comes out. Super pumped for that.
I am, except for the fact that they're immediately following it up with playing at Riot Fest. Like, dude, come on! I'm not going to pay $300 to go see
you. They'll tour by themselves. They're not going to not do that.
Better.
Dude, whatever. Josh Homme's a genius. Don't make fun of him.
I make fun of everybody. It's what I do.
My best thing ever is... I bought Jaipur yesterday because that game kicks ass.
You only think it kicks ass because after Jeff whooped you four times, you beat me twice.
Well, actually, I beat you once because it was two rounds.
Oh, right.
No, I've been playing it on my phone like a madman at work the last 2 weeks, and I'm super addicted to it, so I bought the actual game last night, and yeah, I definitely don't like losing to Jeff or anyone ever in any game, but the game's still amazing. I love it.
Yep.
That's a good, like, pre-makeout game.
That's really weird, because you were playing with only me and Jeff on your phone, so...
Saying, you never know. You could go into GameStop and ask a girl out and have her shut you down before you even finish your sentence. You never know. Shut up.
Chris?
That's the best thing ever. King Diamond.
How awesome would that be if I had them on vinyl right now?
I get rid of the gnats. That's the best thing ever.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine.
But yeah, that's it. Gnats. Gone. Best thing ever.
Well, all right then. Well, then that is going to wrap us up for the week. You can find me on Twitter at XorcinX. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury. You can find Chris at SkateXEdge. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/reviewandroast. You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/reviewandroast. You can find us on the Instagram at instagram.com/reviewandroast or /Star Wars Tabletop. That you can head over to comicroast.com to listen to every podcast we've ever done until we start doing the Patreon exclusives, so better go sign up before they start. We'll be right back.